The human spirit is unconquerable. We are individuals and we are sovereign, born with unlimited potential, gifted from our creator. Our mission is to break free from the systems that bind us.
I volunteer as tribute.
We strive for peace and prosperity and overcome all challenges, roadblocks, and obstacles. We are empowered because we think for ourselves and we act for ourselves. We are self-reliant and independent, but guided by the wisdom of those who share our values.
What possible difference can I make?
There is no government, no ruler, nor ideas that are able to stop us. We are driven to succeed because we seek political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
This is Mike Corbell, and you are listening to The Invictus Mind.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Invictus Mind. This is your host, Mike Corbell. It's another wonderful sunny fall day here at the end of October in Chicago, and I am truly feeling inspired. Today, I want to share a message that encapsulates what the real meaning of Invictus is. Of course, that word does mean unconquerable, and I believe that in order to become unconquerable, it is important that we learn that our destiny is truly in our own hands. I want to give a quick shout out to my friends at the Nomad Network who just recently posted some content pertinent not only to my own career, but what I believe is truly at the crux of the current conversation in the Liberty Movement. Of course, the Nomad Network is a digital community where entrepreneurs, artists, and liberty-minded individuals are coming together to share ideas, to encourage each other, and to learn to grow in order to position themselves to live the life that they want on their own terms, regardless of the political landscape we see in front of us. This is my free plug for a great place to hang out instead of Facebook and Twitter, where the conversation always seems to be negative and, in reality, is truly inconsequential to making any kind of change in our lives. You can, of course, check out the Nomad Network by going to my.nomadnetwork.app, but I will leave a link in the show notes to this episode. You know, recently on a lot of the podcasts I've been listening to, I've been hearing discussions about how people are ignoring the topics that are truly affecting us. You know, we can see that we're not going back to 2019. Here in 2021, things are not going back to normal. Left and right, we are seeing people threatened with their jobs for not taking a medical treatment. We see entire companies getting shut down and becoming out of work. The term essential employee has really come to fruition, which I think is an incredibly ignorant and incoherent statement. And although they have lifted many of the restrictions for employment, we are seeing left and right that help wanted signs are on restaurant doors and office buildings. We, of course, know that many people have become reliant on government handouts, stimulus checks, and unemployment checks, but how long is that going to last? Personally, I think people are not returning to work, not because they're lazy and want to live off the government dole, but I think rather that they realize that they had no job security and they do not want to risk being in a position where they are on the chopping block again. And yet there's many people who still think it's important to campaign for the next political election and vote for the people who are going to stop this stuff rather than spend the time bettering themselves financially. The word post-libertarian has come up in many podcast circles, and I think it's a pejorative word right now because most people really don't understand what it means. And, you know, the real message of the Praxians is what they're calling themselves, I believe, is that you really can't help people unless you first help yourself. You know, I'm not here to tell a person what they should or should not do. But it seems to me that the people who are fighting what they call the post-libertarians don't understand this message, that we as individuals, as families, as influencers in our community can and should find freedom with our own devices, that we should position ourselves to help others before we worry about who the next person we're going to elect is. And that's why I think there's a great division going on, because people literally don't understand what true principles of liberty are. Go out there and control the source, as Jason Stapleton will always say. But other than that, you know, worry about yourself first. Jordan Peterson has often said we need to clean our own rooms before we can worry about the world. But I'm not here to discuss the tenets of post-libertarianism or anything like that, but rather I want to share what I found to be very useful to me. You know, I discovered what it meant to be independent a long time ago. A friend of mine had me look at his business one time. And I'm going to get into the merits of that business in a second, but I want to discuss why having a backup plan is so important. For me, it wasn't because of anything government did. This was well before the shutdowns and the term essential employee came around. But it was important because at the time, I disliked what I was doing professionally. Now, I was a HVAC technician, and I got a good job in a union. I was making good money. And my job was obviously to fix and or repair heating and air conditioning devices on top of commercial buildings. But I was up on the rooftops of buildings in a dead cold of winter in Chicago. And, of course, in contrast, on the scalding summer days, I was frequently on call and always fighting traffic between service jobs. I'd have to take 2 showers a day. On top of that, I could never, ever advance because a union school that was designed to bring the Class C workers such as myself up to Class B journeymen or Class A masters was at the opposite side of the city. It was quite crazy that I would start work at 7:30 in the morning, be done by 4 o'clock, and then have to get an hour away just in time in order to get to the school fighting the Chicago traffic. They always told me that if I was late to class, I couldn't get in. So I was like, even after an hour drive, after a long day of work, if I was 5 minutes late, I couldn't hit the class. And so I basically threw up my hands and said, there's no possible way for me to advance. But not only that, when you have a job, a J-O-B, you are truly reliant on when that boss tells you to work. You can't come and go as you please. You can't control how much money you're making. I mean, even if I got overtime for fixing a machine and not being able to advance, I couldn't really command the amount of income I was making. And so my net worth was not what I really thought it was going to be. You know, many people are in this situation. They build their lives around job security, which in itself is an impossibility. It's like a businessman having only one client, which is extremely dangerous. But these people live quiet lives of desperation. They never get paid their true net worth. They're always told what to do. They got to wake up to an alarm clock. And for me, that was just not a life I wanted to live. So when my friend introduced me to his business, I had open eyes to it. So I want to talk a little bit about some of these business opportunities that we hear out there, because I really think that in these days, especially in the political climate where they're forcing you to take a vaccination or they're threatening you to not even be able to eat, then you need to have a backup plan, because why would you want to live a life of quiet desperation? Or in some cases, you might be loudly desperate and whining and complaining, but failing to do anything about it. I really think that one of the true blessings that we still have, and if you want to call it freedom, that term can be used loosely, but the freedom we have to choose still the kind of career that we really want to have. We still have ample opportunity to be able to make the choice as to what we want to do career-wise, and we have more than enough opportunities to learn and to grow and develop new skills and to be able to take that career path on our own terms. So I realize that there are all kinds of businesses that people can and do start. But sadly, many people never start a business because they say that there are significant obstacles, or rather what I'll say is perceived obstacles in their way. People make all kinds of excuses for this. You know, they use the lack of capital as the number one reason to not start a business. In many cases, there is validity there, but nowadays with digital businesses on the rise and information businesses growing, capital is less of a concern. People can start businesses with little to no capital as long as they have an internet connection and they can grow a network of people. You know, capital is not a big problem. People can also start jobs on a part-time basis where they can still focus on their full-time jobs. And they don't have to worry about quitting or leaving that employment, that security, and they can actually start things on their own. Some of the other people will say that, they have a lack of self-confidence, or they feel that they have inadequate training. But, you know, again, that's truly becoming less and less a reality. People can learn all kinds of new skills online and take courses and things like Skillshare or other types of classes that as long as you have an internet connection, you can learn something else. And many, many new businesses also have mentors and experts to be there for you in order to train you in what you need to do. Of course, finally, the last obstacle is time. Time is always an issue for people. You know, a mentor of mine once said that millionaires are made at midnight. What he meant is that people can have their 9-to-5 jobs, but then afterwards they have 16 hours a day in which to focus on their other activities in life. Of course, it's important to spend time with family, to eat, and to sleep, but rather than wasting their additional time on social media or catching up on your favorite Netflix show, working on a business in the after hours can really have a significant impact on your life. So now we can talk about whether or not a person can make excuses or they can take action to change their lives, because in my opinion, relying on political activity to change the parameters of what's going on in life is the worst strategy that you could have. It's best to control the source of your income, to take action, and there are myriad opportunities out there. You know, I first heard the term gig economy back in 2016. I knew about what they called side hustles and businesses that could be done part-time, but I never heard the word gig economy. I found an article on usafacts.org where they defined what the word gig economy means. It says, a broad definition of the gig economy might include all freelance and contract workers or anyone taking a job for a finite amount of time. However, recent usage of the term gig economy has tended to focus on workers who find work through and are paid by technology platforms. The Bureau of Labor Statistics calls this electronically mediated work and recently published the first government study of this group of workers, providing new insight into the gig economy. So technology platforms, we know everyone has heard about Uber and possibly DoorDash or Lyft, or, you know, if you're more artistic and creative, there are companies like Fiverr out there and Upwards. But there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of types of jobs that people can actually have. So much so that this article is saying that there are 1.6 million gig economy workers in the United States. Of course, they mentioned companies like Uber and TaskRabbit. These workers account for 1% of the entire U.S. workforce. At the same time, the study is also saying that in 2015, the Government Accountability Office estimated that people in non-traditional work arrangements could account for as much as one-third of the workforce. It says 72% of the 1.6 million people working gig jobs work full-time, meaning more than 35 hours per week. Not all gig workers are self-employed. In fact, 63% report being an employee rather than being self-employed. 80% of self-employed gig workers don't have formal business entities set up. And related to that, you know, I want to give a shout-out to my friend Rob Lindemann, who just today from the Nomad Network put up a great piece of content related to the difference between a 1099 contractor and a W-2 employee. You know, there are a lot of businesses who are in need of short-term labor for specific projects or who want to hire people temporarily but are forced to pay for workers' benefits like health insurance or payroll taxes or retirement plans. You know, we saw a lot of companies downsizing in the era of Obamacare because of the astronomical cost of healthcare. These companies would then hire people for less than 35 hours a week because then they wouldn't be required to cover the additional expenses. Now, that in itself can open a Pandora's box of problems, but this is precisely when the gig economy started. You know, unfortunately, even today, there are states who are shunning businesses who pay people 1099s. In California, for example, there's something called the ABC test to differentiate whether a person is a contractor or an employee. Now they're requiring people who drive Uber cars or DoorDash delivery drivers to become employees, which in my estimation is ruining the benefits of actually having a side hustle. I mean, look, the tax benefits alone are the number one reason to get a side hustle. When a person is a contractor, they get to file what's called a Schedule C on their taxes. Then they can declare their income in terms of profits and losses and use the numbers in correlation to their W-2s or their spouse's W-2s. I'm going to use DoorDash for example here. This is easiest for me to talk about because in 2016, I was fired from a sales position, and rather than going on unemployment, I learned that DoorDash was really easy and a good way to make money when I needed it. But what most drivers don't realize is that you can deduct the mileage from your taxes. I mean, currently the government is paying 55.5 cents per mile that can be deducted. So what that really means is, let's say a person drives 10,000 miles for DoorDash in a year on a part-time basis. Essentially, that entitles them to $5,500 in deductions. So for a family that earns, let's say, $60,000 that year for the deductions from mileage, you know, they can subtract $5,500. So the family's tax burden is now $54,500 because of that Schedule C. Although doing DoorDash over the years, I've met so many people who didn't know about that. Just like that article said, that these people who are in the gig economy don't even set up their businesses as a business. The reality is that any kind of business that is filed as a sole proprietor allows for Schedule C deductions, and the government allows up to 3 years without claiming that a profit was made to use an IRS form. So why wouldn't you want to start a side hustle just for that reason? And in the case of other businesses, you can write off just about anything. You have depreciation on assets. You can, if let's say you get a cell phone, you can write off your cell phone bill, your computer, internet usage, business use of home. There's all kinds of different deductions. The cost of labor, cost of goods sold. Anybody who is going to be a sole proprietor should definitely look into getting a CPA or learn about the tax deductions that you're enabled to get. I don't know why these people are actually working for these companies, although, you know, they don't have the burden of having a boss telling them when they can go to work. But they are, in fact, even in the gig economy, they are sole proprietors and should definitely be aware of the tax benefits they get for doing that. And we need to pay attention to the laws that the government wants to pass to get rid of tax benefits, because I really think that they want to take those taxes out of your paycheck on a weekly basis. You know, a lot of libertarians favor the saying, taxation is theft, and that's exactly what it is. But I think the government gets away with it because they take it out of our regular paychecks if you have a W-2, rather than people figuring out how much they owe to the government when they file their taxes in what I think is the proper way at the end of the year, and they claim all their deductions and then pay that way. If everybody was to pay their taxes at the end of the year rather than having it deducted from their paycheck every week, people would realize how much theft is going on and where this money is actually going. You know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of these type of gig economy jobs out there, and definitely the tax benefits as well as other benefits for having a business is a reason why people should look into them. In this day and age, I don't understand how people can be so concerned about losing their job. I mean, obviously, you probably won't make $100,000 a year driving for DoorDash, but you can make decent money on a regular basis, even if you drove for full-time hours. And you know, you don't have the burden of having a boss. You can come and go as you please. You get the tax benefits. But most importantly, you know, these are considered essential businesses. Many of them are anyway, like DoorDash delivering food, and some delivery type jobs are considered essential. And the government really can't shut you down. So for those who are considering their options, you know, definitely look into some of these gig economy types of jobs, because they really have changed the economy. And I don't think there's any reason why a person, you know, can't find work doing that. Of course, if you don't have a vehicle, there are other things you can do. Like I mentioned before, there's Fiverr and Upwards, and I don't know, there's translation services. You know, you can do some research on all that, but definitely, these are pay-for-service types of jobs and industries, and although you may not have all your health benefits that you get if you had a full-time employment situation with a W-2, there are great programs out there that will help pay for those costs as independent contractors and other types of healthcare resources. All right, well, now I want to spend a few minutes talking about what I may consider to be the most unappreciated, misunderstood, or most outrightly hated business model, and that, of course, is network marketing. The infamous multi-level marketing business plan, or MLM. These types of businesses are referred to as pyramid schemes or Ponzi schemes, and for the record, pyramid schemes are illegal, and Charles Ponzi was in prison for ripping people off. You know why pyramid schemes are illegal? It's because the way they work is that it's a business model that offers no product, no service, and simply takes money from one person and distributes it up a chain to the top somewhere where one guy sits on a pile of money, but no one has received anything of value for it. So, once again, for the record, pyramid schemes are illegal, and multi-level marketing or network marketing are legitimate business ventures. All right, so look, there are some legitimate reasons that people are mistrusting or fearful or skeptical of multi-level marketing companies, so I'm not going to disparage all their concerns. I do want to address them, but I first want to correct some of the basic misunderstandings of this type of business structure. I'm going to explain how every single business model is shaped like a pyramid. Just look at the company you work for. Or if you're the CEO, the person sitting at the top, your business model will have numerous employees sitting in different positions beneath it. There are, of course, the general laborers at the bottom. They may be the lowly fry cooks and the hamburger flippers at McDonald's. Or they may be the digital ditch diggers, which is a term I've loved since the first time I heard it, sitting in an office somewhere. Then there's going to be first-level managers who are told what to do by the mid-level managers. These people then next will have a district or regional manager to answer to, and they have usually some kind of executive board or executive management team all the way at the top. And guess what? The guy at the top, whether he is a franchise owner of McDonald's or someone like a Jeff Bezos at the top of a huge corporation, that person is earning a percentage off of everyone in between, the person flipping a burger or processing the online order at Amazon. So every single business model is a pyramid. And though I did say pyramid schemes are illegal, it's because they don't offer a product or service. If you have a business that offers a product or a service, then in my book, it is a legitimate business. I'm going to refer to an article I read at consumer.ftc.gov concerning MLMs and how they work in pyramid schemes for the next part here. And I'm going to dispute all of these facts one by one. So it says that the article, what are MLMs and how do they work? MLM companies sell their products or services through person-to-person sales. That means that you're selling directly to other people, maybe from your home, a customer's home, or online. If you join an MLM program, the company may refer to you as an independent distributor, participant, or contractor. Most MLMs say you can make money two ways, by selling the MLM's products yourself to retail customers who are not involved in MLM, or by recruiting new distributors and earning commissions based on what they buy and their sales to retail customers. Okay, so far I see nothing wrong with that definition. You know, if you have a home-based business and you're selling products or you're selling an information product to somebody online, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. You know, you can walk to a store and buy products or you can sell it at home. Either way, it's still legit. It says, you're considered an independent distributor, participant, or contractor. Well, I've already discussed some of the tax benefits for being an independent contractor. This means that the company itself doesn't have overhead in terms of having to pay employee benefits, workers' compensation, healthcare, health insurance, retirement benefits, any of that kind of stuff. So the model itself seems attractive because if you are an owner, then you don't have to pay for employees. They have to take care of their own expenses. So nothing wrong with that. Next it says, by recruiting new distributors and earning commissions based on what they buy. Okay, so most companies, if you're selling business to business, you're probably not going to be a customer of your own business. But if you are selling a product, you probably believe in it, you probably think it's legitimate, and you would have no problem purchasing that product for yourself. Again, whether it's retail in a store or it's from your home or it's online, it all seems to be fine. And as far as recruiting new distributors, here's a fact. Every single organization on the face of the planet recruits. Every single organization recruits. You can look at any kind of religion. Most religions will proselytize to add more people to come to their church. Any kind of business out there, if it's a retail shop, I'll use McDonald's, for example. They want to hire employees. The guy who owns McDonald's does not want to be flipping the burgers, making the fries, running the cash register, making the shakes, as well as owning the franchise. The U.S. military recruits. They need more soldiers to go fight foreign wars overseas. Colleges will recruit. Sports teams will recruit. Every single organization recruits. So the term recruiting, although it's fearful in the eyes of many people skeptical about multi-level marketing, recruiting is nothing more than building a team of people to work for and with you. Because if you have to work all by yourself, you're not going to get as much done. J. Paul Getty is famous for saying that he'd rather have the efforts of 1% of 100 people than 100% of only one person in his business. The reality is every company recruits. But I want to focus next on this idea of distribution. Obviously, if you work for a company that has a huge warehouse, you have a problem with inventory. You have to make sure that the inventory keeps turning, right? You don't want to have inventory sitting in your warehouse and not being sold because then you're losing money. So one of the fearful things that many people skeptical about MLMs is that you have a distribution overload. You have a inventory overload. You have products that you cannot get rid of. And so, you know, you hear stories back in the day of people who worked for Quickstar or what's the name of that company? Amway, where they would have lotions, potions, and pills filling up their garage or their basement, and they can't get rid of them. They can't sell them fast enough. That's a problem with any kind of business. You know, if you're not marketing your products, you're not marketing what you have, and no one's buying it, well, then you're not going to be in business very long. So even in a multi-level marketing, distribution is still something you have to focus on. Now, if you have a garage full of products, potions, lotions, or pills, for example, then you need a team of people that can help you sell that stuff. I know a lot of people are skeptical about whether or not the company will force you to buy that product. And I already mentioned that if you have a business of your own, even if it's not multi-level marketing, you probably like the product that you're selling, so you might want to have one. Some companies will have an expectation of you buying it. I guess that's a concern that you'd have to look into. But where people get upset is because they are promised that they will make tons of money, and yet if they don't make an effort to sell those products, then they're left with a warehouse or a house or a basement full of the inventory. And I can see that definitely being a problem. But as in any business, you need to go to work. So I want to dive deeper into this idea of recruiting, because I think that's the probably number one concern when it comes to recruiting, not just to find teammates to get rid of your inventory, but because a lot of people in multi-level marketing companies will really tarnish the idea of the business model. You get people who legitimately want to recruit every single breathing human being that they possibly can run into. And, you know, it can be cringe, especially if you're told that, you know, you need to go after your family members, your brothers, your sisters, your friends, your aunts and uncles. And that's considered your warm market. People do get annoyed when every conversation that comes out of your mouth at the Thanksgiving dinner is, hey, you don't want to join my business? So yeah, you have to have some kind of tact doing that. But literally, you want to be able to build a network of people that you can work with properly. This might not be your friends and your family. This might be other people. So recruiting friends and family is one thing, but I want to share a story of what I used to tell people when I had considerations about that approach. You can look at any single type of sales organization. I'm going to use, for example, my mentor. He told this story before he got involved in a company that I work with, that he used to be a vacuum cleaner salesman. Now, of course, everyone wants to know where you get your leads as a salesman. That's the most important function of being a salesman, is getting your leads, which is why multi-level marketing companies want to find distributors, because those are considered sales leads. Now, if you were in a vacuum cleaner industry like my mentor was, how did he get his leads? Well, first of all, he had to start with people he knew. Any legitimate sales organization, whether you're selling potions, lotions, and pills, whether you're selling insurance, whether you're selling vacuum cleaners, or maybe even cars, you got to probably start with people that you know. This is your warm market. It's the easiest way to actually get people to purchase your product, because they already like and trust you. And most people will not do business with somebody unless they already like and trust them. So if you're selling vacuum cleaners, for example, let's say you had a $1,000 vacuum cleaner, as was used in the example my friend shared with me. How many people did he know in his immediate family that he could sell a legitimate $1,000 vacuum cleaner to? Well, that list was very short. So he probably ran out of his warm market pretty quickly, because he didn't know that many people who wanted to buy a $1,000 vacuum. But if you're selling a product that has a much better retail value and is useful to somebody, like some kind of vitamin, some kind of energy drink, some kind of Herbalife or something like that, I'm just using these examples, then you're probably going to have a much more attractive offer to people who want to buy your product. You definitely have to work in the warm market if you want to get started and get experience in any kind of sales environment. But eventually, that warm market is going to run dry. You only have so many aunts and uncles and cousins and brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents to sell to. So if that is your whole business model is to only sell to those people, well, you're going to have a very short and unsuccessful business. So as any salesman would think, the next thing that they want to do is they want to generate referrals. Well, who are the most easiest people to generate referrals from? The most easiest are the people who are already satisfied with your products and with your services. So, for example, if you started recruiting or selling to your friends and family, and they were happy and they were satisfied with the product that they got, they probably know other people that maybe you do not know who might be interested in buying your products. Again, using my mentor as an example, when he was selling vacuum cleaners, you know, he sold only so many to his immediate family, his immediate warm market. Then he had to extend himself to find out how many people did they know who also wanted to buy a $1,000 vacuum. Again, that list was probably very short. So you can see why most people who are in multi-level marketing companies want to be able to expand their warm market. They have the immediate family and friends, and then they go on to those referrals. Eventually, when those referrals start running out, well, guess what? You still have a business. Now you have to engage in real marketing tactics. Well, as any company would have you, if you want to grow, you need to have more outlets, more places where you can sell your product. Whether you're opening up a new restaurant, a new franchise, or you're just getting a new office building or warehouse somewhere, or by recruiting somebody, you have a new outlet in which to sell your product or service. And so now you have the ability to work with that person and use their warm market. In other words, their brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers and grandmothers and aunts and uncles and cousins. So suddenly every new person that you recruit in your business has now become a potential customer for you. And that leads to another concern that people have. Wait a minute, Mike, you just want to recruit me so you can sell to my friends and my family. Well, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of, because a good business person doesn't want to just use people and sell people. They want to build their team so they actually have reoccurring sales and they have those outlets that they can continue building a business to. So the concern that a person just wants to use you to sell to your friends and family, and that is what makes it a pyramid, because the person who recruited you sells to that person, who recruits somebody else sells to that person, and all of a sudden all these sales are happening and nobody is getting paid for it. Well, that would be a illegitimate and poorly structured business model if anybody in between is not actually also becoming an independent distributor. And so that raises another concern. According to this consumer report from the FTC.gov, it wants to protect you against having a bad MLM experience and be aware of certain things that you can ask yourself. Number one, it says, do you want to be a salesperson? It says, if you join an MLM, you'll be a salesperson. Your job will be to sell the company's product and, in many cases, to convince other people to join, invest, and sell. If you don't like selling, or if you are uncomfortable asking people you know to put their time and money into a business venture, then joining an MLM is a bad idea. Well, first of all, I don't disagree with that. However, we want to talk about any kind of business. Your business is sales and marketing. If you are a business owner, whether that is in a network marketing company or your own business from home, you have to understand what it means to sell. You should always be selling things. Unfortunately, human nature says that selling is one of people's top fears, which I think is actually ridiculous because everybody sells. Selling is nothing more than convincing somebody to make a decision that they would not necessarily make on their own. So your teachers in school are selling the idea that the things that they want to teach you are things that you wouldn't come up with yourselves. Okay, if you're married or if you have a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you have to sell that person on the idea that you would be a good match for them. When you go out to dinner, if you go out with friends or family, you have to sell the product to that person. Say, this would be a good idea to go to for dinner. Food tastes good. If you've ever watched a movie, you're selling. And I can't tell you how many times I've sat in interviews talking to people who are explaining to me how they're not good at sales, they don't have any skill set, and they're legitimately selling me on the idea that they don't know how to sell. Everybody can sell. But, you know, if you don't like selling, then sure, MLM is probably not the best opportunity for you. And you can be a digital ditch digger, or you can work as a fry cook, and you can work for some other company that, you know, hopefully you consider to have a job at the end of the day. I mean, obviously there are doctors and engineers and things who do important things, but they still have to sell their skills in order to get contracted jobs or to get employed in the first place. Another question that this article says that you need to have is whether you have a solid business plan or a solid sales plan. You need to consider whether you have friends and family who will buy this product from you over and over again, or think about how you would be able to find and keep other regular customers. Can people buy something like this product elsewhere, maybe for less? Okay, so once again, the question here was whether you have a business plan and whether or not your product is marketable. In other words, can people buy it elsewhere or only from you? And the truth behind that is it doesn't matter if you're an MLM or if you're just in some kind of direct sales organization where there's no recruiting going on, no multi-level marketing going on, but you're trying to sell a product or service. The key there is you have to be able to entice the person to want to buy from you, because yeah, almost any product under the sun could be found somewhere else, but that's natural competition in the marketplace. So that's not really a objection to multi-level marketing per se. It's just you need to understand what business is all about. You always want to have the most marketable product with the most value. People are going to buy you, the sales representative, before they buy the product or service. And so that's not really an objection to multi-level marketing. It's just a business. It's just having business acumen. Okay, so the next objection is, what are your income goals? You might think that with your willingness to work hard, you can earn substantial income through the MLM. In fact, most people who join MLMs and work hard make little or no money, and some of them lose money. Continuing on with this article, every business venture has risks. MLMs are no different. Even if the startup costs seem low, additional expenses can add up quickly. Expenses can include training and travel costs, website fees, promotional materials, cost to host parties, and cost to buy products. If you need to borrow or use your credit card to finance your expenses, you may face hefty interest charges too. Also consider the time demand of the business, like going to training, recruiting new distributors, managing paperwork, recording inventory, and shipping products. I mean, are they really just ripping on multi-level marketing businesses here, or are they ripping on anybody who owns a business? With every business, you're going to have risk. You're going to have cost of doing business. You're going to have marketing costs and travel costs, and of course, sales training you're going to have. You're going to have to hire people. So all those costs that are incurred with MLMs are going to be the same with any business. So there's really no objection per se to multi-level marketing business. Going back to having a business plan for multi-level marketing business, of course, you can't just join any company and be like, okay, I want to have a sales goal of X number of sales per month without actually having a plan in which to implement it. So, you know, most of the people who are objecting to MLM, their biggest concern is that they don't want to start a business of any sort. And so they're just happen to blame it on this network marketing opportunity, which they happen to call a pyramid scheme, and we've already covered how that's not even a correct vernacular for this type of business. I do want to get to the final objection, which is actually very cringe to me, and I understand why people would object to this, and it's actually what prompted this whole conversation. The Federal Trade Commission put out another letter that threatened network marketing companies, multi-level marketing companies, with falsely talking about income earning ability. Right, and that's one of the recruiting tactics, which I think is very misguided and very unprofessional for multi-level marketing companies when they make up stories or they lie or they put up improper earning abilities. Now, granted, like any business, you can make a lot of money with multi-level marketing. I know some people who have made high 6 and 7 figures personally. And, you know, the effort behind what you do with your own business or what you do in multi-level marketing is going to be pretty much the same. So we shouldn't just tell people how much you can make without saying, hey, you know what? This is not a guaranteed income, but this is the potential because people are actually making this. You wouldn't go to a company or rather work for a company as an employee and have them tell you, yeah, you can make $100,000 and you get there and your paycheck only looks like you're making $35,000. So yeah, that would be fraud. And I definitely think that multi-level marketing companies who are engaging in fraudulent practices, telling people wrong numbers as far as income earning ability, they're setting expectations that are unreal. And people can and do get hurt by that. But again, if you treat an MLM like a reputable business person would, then you should be able to show examples of people either on your team, in your upline, or within your organization who are actually earning specific dollar amounts. So I don't know why the FTC felt the need to put a law out or make some kind of program where they're going to threaten fines, heavy fines, for people putting out fraudulent information about their companies. It seems like an unnecessary, unwarranted attack on the MLM industry. I would say that all fraud is deceiving people and you shouldn't be doing that. And you're not going to last very long in business if you lie to a bunch of people, because those people I see who make improper claims about their earning ability and the ability within the company, what they end up having is a bunch of people who get excited, who find out the truth, the reality, and then they leave the company anyway and start putting things up on social media. And that's why MLM has a bad name. Okay, so I want to share a little bit of my own experience with the few network marketing companies I've been involved with. I've checked out a whole bunch of companies. I happen to be involved with two of them right now. And I will tell you this much. There's nothing wrong with the business model of multi-level marketing. In fact, for people who have absolutely no experience in business, it's probably the perfect place to be able to understand and learn the things that you need to do to have a business, any kind of business. You have an incredible support system, and a marketing model often is already created for you. So more than half the work is already done. I want to make reference to a book that I found in my library here. And when I say the author's name, some people might just immediately dismiss it because of the times that we live in. But it's a book by the title of Why We Want You to Be Rich. And it was authored by Robert Kiyosaki, who has Rich Dad, Poor Dad fame as far as in cash flow quadrant. And he partnered up with Donald Trump. And this book was written before Donald Trump was president. So regardless of your political affiliation, you have to acknowledge that he was a successful businessman and understands business and business models. So they had some very good things to talk about network marketing and why they thought that it was important to actually be involved in network marketing. If you are familiar with the cash flow quadrant by Robert Kiyosaki, there are different places where you can earn income. If you've ever seen the cross pattern where it says ESBI, E stands for employee, S stands for self-employed, B stands for business owner, and of course, I stands for investor. The idea is if you're an employee, you're simply trading your time for money. If you're self-employed, you're doing the same thing essentially, because whether you work for a boss or you work for yourself, you have to go out there and earn money physically in order to collect it. If you are a business owner, that means that you actually now have a system that has been created, a system that's been designed, a marketing system, a sales system, a system where everything will just flow on its own. So like an owner of a McDonald's, for example, going back to that message, he is no longer having to cook the fries or the hamburgers or work the cash register, because he has hired a bunch of people that runs a system for him. So multi-level marketing is very much like that same model. It's a system where it's already implemented, it's already designed, and there's really not a lot of work that needs to go behind it. The hardest part is continuing to network with people. Definitely, you want to make sure that you're continuing marketing, you're continuing selling things, and that's where it does become tricky. I think for me, another thing to make note when you're looking at a company, obviously you want to look at its track record. You want to look at the products and services that are being offered. You want to know and understand the mentors and make sure that they understand your wants and your needs. All that's important when you're actually working for a multi-level marketing or networking company. But more importantly, I think that there is a need to look at the value proposition, because obviously there are, I say this all the time when I make fun of these companies, when I make fun of them, lotions, potions, and pills, right? And definitely if you have a product that retail value is, you know, $10, how much effort does it take to put in to make that $10 sale? How many numbers of people do you actually need to sell that $10 piece of product versus when you have more value-oriented products such as the industry I'm working in financial services? The effort that it takes to deliver one service to a client is about the same, but much more value to both the client and to my own pocketbook. And so it is important to look at what kind of value you are providing, because everything in the end is going to weigh out. You know, some companies require you to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to make it worth your while. Some companies only need a handful of people who understand the product and service very well, and you can be very successful in that too. So that's one of the things that you want to be aware of. I think my favorite part of multi-level marketing is the fact that it can be done on a part-time basis with little to no risk. The startup costs are usually very small, and again, depending on the company, especially because the business I work in is more informational-based than product-based. There's not a lot of inventory in there, and there's all kinds of training and mentorship, and you know, even though you have out-of-pocket expenses for that kind of stuff, again, with the right mentality that this is a business, that it is something that you need to progress yourself in, that you need to continue to reach out to people, you're going to you're going to be able to build a successful business. One of the concerns that a lot of people have, I think, that I found in my own business, is that you do have a higher attrition rate in these types of businesses, because generally speaking, people don't have that mentality, that business mentality. You know, they still have an employee mentality where they think that if they put 40 hours a week in, that they're going to get some kind of value proposition out of that. And there might be times where you're not making any money. You're building a business. You're networking. You're continuing to grow, and people get fed up and frustrated, and they end up leaving. The least successful people always leave these companies, and they're the first ones to put stuff on social media again. So, you know, be cognizant of that when you actually research a product. You don't necessarily want to get information about a company on social media, probably not on Google, because you're always going to find the naysayers. Go out and find somebody who has a proven track record. And even though you have a high attrition rate, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of finding that right person. There is a saying in multi-level marketing that it is a numbers game. So, you know, the more sociable you are, the more you have an ability to go out and meet and get referrals, you are going to find that one person who really fits into your business model. So that could be frustration resolving if you actually find that right person, and just have an open mentality, open mind. Okay, so the final thing I'll say about multi-level marketing, it is a community-based organization, and the most successful people in any multi-level marketing endeavor are the ones who make a decision to go all in, to focus all of their efforts on building a business. I had somebody, one of the founders of my company, told me that when he first got involved in this company, he spent 18 months working harder than he's ever worked in his entire life, and he spent the next 15 years talking about it. And so if you have the ability to just put everything that you have into it, to focus exclusively on building your business, which, by the way, should be done with any business endeavor, but particularly if you're in a team-building environment, you put a lot of work into it up front, and then true residuals actually can happen in multi-level marketing if you put the right system in place, whereby you know, the system kind of lives by itself like any business should, where you as the owner can now step away, take a month off, several months off, or basically just let the thing grow even without your presence. So I will say that if you're not 100% committed to it, it'll be harder. It doesn't mean that you can't use it as a good source of income on a part-time basis, and definitely as a backup plan, like for what we started with this podcast, that you know, if you are unsure about whether you're going to have job security in the future, definitely you want to be looking into a few backup plans. And you know, The same is with the gig economy, the same with multi-level marketing. If you actually start a business and you understand the tax laws behind having a business, you are entitled to all kinds of tax deductions, business write-offs, and even unclaimed profits for up to 3 years. So my suggestion is just find one you like, find some people that you like, give it a shot. You know, it's not for everybody, but in this day and age, you can't just be too secure in your own situation. And there are hundreds, if not thousands of opportunities out there. Just got to have the right mentality. It's better to have an open mind, to try new things, to develop new skills. Sometimes you make money, sometimes you lose money. That's not the mentality you want to have. You want to be able to continue to grow, find out what is the best situation for you to work in, to thrive in. And rather than being a complainer on social media, rather try to make changes within the political arena, which I suppose can be done at the local level, it's better to just try to make yourself more free, to give yourself more independence, the ability to come and go as you please, to work with who you want to have a reduction of stress in your life. Regardless of what's happening in the world around us, just as long as we still have this mentality that we can grow and learn and that there are ample opportunities out there, until they take them away from us, my suggestion is try to adapt them to your life, because I can attest that though I'm not the richest person that I know, that having the ability to come and go as I please, to work with different people, has really put me in a state of liberty, much more than many people I encounter in some of the circles that everybody who listens to this podcast might know of a few. So that's all I want to share with everybody today. I appreciate you sticking around and listening to this longer episode. I wanted it to be shorter, but it turned into almost an hour long. So hopefully you got some great value out of it. And you know, if you like the Invictus Maya podcast, please go ahead and subscribe. I'm on all the podcatchers, and I'm going to be having a YouTube channel and a website with some of the daily tips that I'll have eventually put up. So I want to thank you for your time and look forward to speaking with you again. Have a great day.